All right, folks, we're going to move into step 6 and 7, and for that we have these two fine gentlemen, Elric and Zach.
Thanks, Tarek. Hey, guys, I'm Elric. I'm a heroin and crystal meth addict.
Hey, guys, I'm Zach. I'm an addict and alcoholic.
You have anything you want to open with? You want me just to start talking?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So 6 and 7, I don't know, it's like, you good, T? You can't really talk about, like, any one of these steps by themselves, you know? Like, when I was first getting sober, it was explained to me that the steps are, like, this seamless transition from one into the next one. And that's kind of what we have here. Like, Hunter and Nathan did a great job describing step 5. And kind of what noticed, I guess, maybe you could call this an opinion, it's just an observation of mine, and it's kind of been my experience, is that, you know, it's, like, this program is really just a, you know, consistently coming to believe something, making a decision, and taking some action, you know. And by the time we get to this point in the program, we're not really talking about, you know, drugs and alcohol and stuff anymore. What we're really talking about is, like, character refinement. You know, in writing step 4 and doing step 5, we kind of get to look at, you know, okay, there's probably a lot of stuff in there that had to do with drugs and alcohol. There was a lot of stuff in there that happened before drugs and alcohol, and as I continue to write inventory throughout my sobriety, it has absolutely nothing to do with drugs and alcohol. And so in doing that 5th step, what I really do is get in touch with, like, how powerless I am over my own character and how all these belief systems I have that I grew up with and that I continue to create just continuously get in my way. And so with step 6 and 7, it's kind of like coming to believe in that I cannot do this on my own still. You know, not just stay sober, but, like, I cannot, of my own power, change my character. It has been proven time and time again, you know, the more I write inventory, the more I share a 5th step, that, like, you know, we're not rendered white as snow, like, when we do that 5th step and when we do 6 and 7. Like, to be honest with you, most of my inventories look the same, you know. Not a lot changes. Sometimes the names change, sometimes, you know, something will go away for a couple months, but inevitably it's, for the most part, coming back. And so it's like I'm coming to believe in this stuff, and, you know, in step 7 we kind of make a decision that, like, all right, so, you know, I'm going to ask God to remove this stuff, but, like, we need to follow that up with action, and that's kind of what Bill and Brandon are going to talk about in steps 8 and 9, you know. So it's like anything else, you know, if you were to look at these steps just as, like, their own little thing, it really means nothing. So returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we asked if we had omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We emphasize willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? You know, it's funny, man. Like, the first time I went through the steps, it was a very, like, willy-nilly kind of, like, not a lot of oversight, not a lot of emphasis on steps 6 and 7. It was just, like, go home and sit for an hour. And that was all that, you know, we didn't really read out of the book. And so I went home and I, like, sat for an hour and just kind of, like, pondered the 5th step experience and didn't really see, you know, I kind of just thought, like, hey, step 6 and 7 is just kind of, you know, you ponder for a few minutes before you start looking at 8 and 9, and there wasn't really a lot going on. But when I did my 2nd inventory and I got a competent sponsor who worked out of the book and really took me through this process the way they laid it out for us in this book, I came to realize that, like, you know, step 6 and 7, it says in the 12 and 12, like, this is what separates the men from the boys or the girls from the women. And it's like, you know, now we're getting down to, like, causes and conditions. Like, what the hell is really going on when you peel back the drama that, like you can't live your own life? And so, you know, I've found that I'm, like, constantly in collision with myself and other people, and, like, with these belief systems I have and these defects of character that I have, that, like, I'm continuously being surrendered, you know, by something that is not me, and the fact that, you know, I can't see past my own nose most of the time, you know, and I cause some harm. And it's, like, through these kind of steps, I always feel like I'm coming back and, like, revisiting 6 and 7 periodically, like, through day-to-day life, because it's, like, you know, this is where, you know, if we're practicing a 10-step, we come up against ourselves, you know, and kind of realize that, like, you know, I do not choose to be this way, and I cannot do anything on my own power to change that. So it's like, how am I going to get past this, you know? And that's where this power that everyone keeps talking about comes into play.
Thanks, Elric. Yeah, so when Tarek told me that I've been talking about these two steps, I was pretty excited, because I think that these are two of the most underrated steps. You know, I don't hear many meetings geared towards 6 and 7. I don't hear them discussed very much. And like Elric said, the first time I went through the steps, it was a lot more focused on the action of the inventory, the action of the amends, and getting out and helping people, which I'm grateful for. But the more that I go back to this, and my current sponsor now took me back through 6 and 7 in a way which has been just pivotal for me. So one of the things my sponsor always emphasizes that I found useful is that the steps are in order for a reason, right? And I agree, like, 6 and 7 go hand in hand, but, like, I'll always forget in that, like, step 6 is its own step. Becoming entirely ready to have all these things removed is an actual step, and it's easy to forget that because there's not, like, any tangible action. I'm not going up to someone making an amends. I'm not writing something down. So what does that mean to become entirely ready? And that, going back to the steps being in order, you know, we look at in step 1 and step 2 in the very beginning, like, we are beyond human aid. And it tells us that our only hope is this power, God, this power greater than ourselves, right? And then in step 3, we look at this self-centeredness and its manifestations in our lives. And the book tells us that this is what blocks me from that power. Like, the one thing that's going to keep me from getting high or getting drunk is blocked by these character defects. I cut myself off from that, and I'm in self-will. And that's, you know, when I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. So it's weird, you know, coming in, I get it. It's like, I'm just trying not to die. I'm trying not to go to jail. I'm trying to stop getting high. Like, what does this have? What do these character defects and this character building have to do with anything? But it's really got, you know, in my experience, it's everything. You know, there's, it says, are we ready to let God remove all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? And it's like, how do I come to that conclusion? Like, what's objectionable? You know, I write this stuff in the 4-step on paper, these resentments, these fears, and I look at, like, my part in this and these forms of self-centeredness that are involved on my side of the street, and I start to kind of see it. And then when I share that with someone else, if I'm doing it honestly with humility, it's crystal clear what's objectionable for me. In that process. And it's like, if I truly am grounded in step 1 and know that, like, I'm completely fucked without God, and, like, these are the things that are blocking me from God, then becoming entirely ready usually happens, you know. But see, the thing with me, if I blend them together too much in my mind, I just want to ask God to remove it. And then I'm like, why is it still here? But I'm, like, not ready. I'll share an example. Like, about a year ago, my now fiance, we were having some problems, and I told my sponsor, I was like, I think, like, it wasn't that I was walking around with a resentment, but when there would be an issue, I was aware through, like, this daily inventory that, like, I was reacting in a way where, like, there was emotion from past stuff coming up with these trivial little things. So I'm like, okay, I clearly have a resentment. And I'm talking to him, I'm like, maybe, like, I just need to tell her, like, I need some time to work on this resentment or get rid of this resentment. And he, like, laughed at me. And I remember being a little bit pissed off. And he's like, you don't need, like, time to get rid of the resentment. He's like, are you trying to do it? He's like, I'll take the resentment away right away if you're ready. And at the time, I thought it was, like, way too simplistic and, like, bullshit. And there was more to it than that. And, like, but I really stopped and thought about it. And I was like, why? You know, why would I want a resentment? Like, I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like, I love the peace and contentment that I've become used to. And I'm like, but I really thought about it, and it's like there is some kind of, like, morbid comfort in this, like, self-pity, like, I'm a victim, like, she wronged me or they wronged me or whatever. It seems silly, you know? Like, I'm more of a, I naturally go more toward, like, the pride and ego side than, like, the self-pity side, but I've realized that they're just two sides of the same coin, and both of them are just pure self-centeredness for me, and both of them cut me off from God. I'm not humbly relying on God when I'm sitting there being, like, mad or stewing in my stuff. So, you know, once I realized that, like, oh, there's some kind of weird ego pleasure for me in this, like, I was able to see the self-centeredness of it, you know, I was able to see, like, okay, that's why I'm not, you know, maybe willing to, like, God, remove it. So an exercise that I found very useful is when I'm praying for a certain character defect to be taken away, step 7, humbly asking for it to be taken away, and it's not, I take it back to step 6, because it says, if we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Like, that's a prayer. You know, I pray today, I pray for the willingness to let go of these character defects, probably more than I pray for the character defect itself to be removed. But, you know, I just, there's so much to unpack. There's one sentence in the, or one paragraph that we have here in the big book, which I think covers it, because it really talks about 6 and 7 later on in the 10th step and what we're supposed to do throughout the day, you know, when we watch for these things. And the first step is we ask God at once to remove it. But I, like, I've become very interested and fascinated with, like, the history of AA and looking at the stuff in the context. And when the big book was written, there was, like, 100 roughly alcoholics sober. And Tarek or Dante could probably give me the exact number of how long Bill Wilson had been sober and working the program. But, you know, 14 years later is when Bill Wilson put together the 12 and 12. And at this point, like, hundreds of thousands of people were in AA and sober. And Bill Wilson had been living this deal a lot longer. And that's when, like Elric says, the very first sentence, it's a quote from someone in AA that Bill puts down. He says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. So it's like, it's kind of a big deal, you know, and it's easy to brush over it sometimes going through it. But again, this is the stuff that blocks us. And like Elric said, I have experienced deeply my powerlessness in these character defects. And as long as I'm trying to work on it, as long as I'm trying to be less self-centered, I'm on self. I'm using self on self. Like, I got to let God into this mix. But yeah, that's a, you know, one other thing I just want to point out about step 6 is I love this, right? It's like, so step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. So it tells us again, you know, later on with a little more experience, that this is a lifetime job, and this sort of the action of step 6 is this attitude shift, becoming willing to get rid of these things. It's so easy to rationalize the littlest thing for me. It's like, well, I'm not shooting dope, I'm not in jail, I'm not stealing from somebody. Like, it's okay if I do these other things. But it's a tricky road, you know, because I think beating ourselves up over human mistakes is also a character defect. So I don't think we should be, like, freaking super self-critical. But I think that part of rigorous honesty is being honest with myself. And when there's something that all I really have to do is say, is this spiritual? I feel like this is spiritual. I pretty much know there's something in me. If I'm staying plugged in and talking to other people, then there's usually the clarity on what's objectionable and what's not. But anyway, that's... I'll share one other experience with 6 and 7 real quick, and then I'll pass it back to you. This is fairly recent. I quit smoking back in June, and I wanted to quit smoking for a long time. For like, you know, I had like 2.5 years or so sober at the time. And, you know, my girlfriend's daughter is like, you need to stop smoking. She's always asking me. It's like really hard when a little kid's telling you to stop. Like, I already wanted to stop. Then she got, like, my 5-year-old son, like, Dad, if you smoke, you're going to die. I'm like, God, okay. So, like, stuff was happening where it was, like, I was, like, kind of like, all right, I really need to do something. And I had tried off and on. And, I mean, Tony used to live with me. He knows. I wasn't, like, I was, like, pack a day, American Spirits, like, I have, like, an hour commute for work, and I literally smoked the entire time, which is... For American Spirits, it's like 2 cigarettes, but I mean, just like anything else that I do, like all the way, like no, like even my all three of my roommates that smoked were like, dude, you smoke too much. So I was up against quite a habit, you know, and it was hard. I drive a lot. That's my favorite time to smoke. So anyway, I tried various ways to stop. I like, you know, I got a vape one time and didn't, you know, didn't really work out, whatever. So I was like, finally one day I was like, oh my God, I have this program at my, you know, maybe I should try to utilize that. So I was like, all right. And I used 6 and 7, right? I'm like, all right, praying like, hey God, help me quit smoking. Didn't work. Took it back to step 6 and God, please help me become willing to let go of this, you know? And I swear to God, it pissed Jamie, my fiance, off because we like both smoked, and she was like, "I'll quit when you quit," because she didn't smoke that; she smoked like 2 cigarettes a day. And like, she got mad at me. She's like, "How did you just quit? You didn't give me any kind of warning or anything. You didn't ease into it, right?" Like, I'm praying probably for like a month on my knees, asking for willingness. You know, every time I pray, just throwing that in there. And it was crazy. I got sick. Like, I couldn't really enjoy a cigarette for, like, 3 days. Then, like, even when I felt better and I could actually smoke, I had, like, a really bad cough. So it was, like, kind of embarrassing to even smoke. So I was just, like, hacking up along. Like, I ran out one weekend. And I was like, I could go buy some. I'll just bum one from Jamie. And, like, all these little things just happened. And then it was, like, a Monday morning. I'm, like, on my way to work. And I'd only smoked like 3 cigarettes in the whole weekend, which was like, I was like, man, I was proud of that. You know what I mean? I was like, I should keep this going. And I called Tony, and he had an extra little vape. And I was like, all right, I'm either going to buy a pack of cigarettes on the way to work and like smoke for 10 more years, or I'm like going to go and see if I can get this vape from Tony and make it through the workday without a cigarette. Anyway, that's what I did. It ended up being really easy. I swear to God, I don't know how to describe it, but it felt like that shit just fell off. Just fell away from me. And yeah, I tried to explain that to like people that aren't in the program and like that knew me and knew how I smoked, and they don't get it. Like I said, Jamie was like mad. But you know, and it's whatever. I'm not saying like don't smoke. This was just something that personally for me, through like doing this work and given the circumstances of my life, I had decided that it was objectionable. And I know I didn't do that on my own power, because you know, I smoked for 12 years and was probably trying to quit like for 80% of that and never could. So that's just one tangible example that comes to mind. But
thanks, Zach.
I'll pass back to you.
And I think a big thing to what Zach was just speaking to, you know, is like, in order to have that humility in asking God to remove this stuff, you know, just like willingness, we can't just like be humble. We can't just like ask something in humility. Like, you know, it needs to be preceded by, like, some form of surrender. Like, you needed to be entirely ready to fucking stop smoking. just like kind of in the first step, like we needed to experience humility in the fact that like we can't on our own power stay sober, you know? So for me, kind of an example in my life, so I'll give you a couple. So in being entirely ready, like, so as far as relationship goes, historically, you know, I've been in quite a few long-term relationships. I dated this one girl specifically for 6 years of what I call the dark ages of my addiction. Poor girl. And, like, historically, even in sobriety up into this most recent relationship, my biggest struggle has been, like, being emotionally present, you know, like how women want you to be. You guys know what I'm talking about? Anybody? Like, when that conversation shows up, like, if we have an argument or if she's feeling some type of way about the way I've been acting, you know, and, like, she's ready to have that conversation, it's not even, like, I just, like, she'll talk to me, and I just will not respond. Like, I'll just look at her. And it gets really uncomfortable, and I feel really bad, but there has always been something, like, standing between me and that conversation, and I never knew what it was. I still don't really know what it was. But so, you know, now I'm, like, 6 months sober. I'm sponsoring guys. You know, I'm kicking ass, and I'm like, you know what, like, fuck it, I can get into a relationship, like, I'm spiritually fit, you know what I mean? Whatever that means. And I'm dating this girl, and of course, like, you know, it starts to happen where, like, you know, I can't see past my own nose, and I'm causing harm, and, you know, this girl's, like, trying to have, like, a legitimate adult conversation that, like, two people in a relationship are supposed to have, and I find I can't even really talk. You know, I don't know what to say. I, like, kind of feel bad for you, but not really. And in my head, I'm, like, kind of observing all this stuff happening. And I'm, like, why can I not show up with compassion in this? Like, why can't I be present for this conversation? Like, why do I continuously put women through this stuff? You know? And it was the first time I had ever really gained some clarity in the moment of it happening, you know? And it was, like, you know, of course, that relationship comes to an end, like, a day later. And, you know, it was, like, through that experience, I became entirely ready to, like, okay, I clearly have no power over this situation. I have no power over this aspect of my life. I have no idea. Like, I just have absolutely nothing to, like, throw at this problem, you know? And it was through, like, that really shitty, kind of painful, awkward experience that I was, like, forced into humility. I was beaten into a state of reasonableness, and I was like, God damn it, can I just, like, not harm women in this way anymore? Like, I don't know what that looks like. Like, I don't know how to get from A to B, but whatever you tell me to do, you know, I'll just do it. Which is a lot like, you know, when I first got sober, was like, I have no idea how to get from a homeless needle junkie to, like, a sober, productive member of society, but whatever that road looks like, I'm willing to do, you know? And Bill and Brandon are going to talk about, you know, I was told, I forget who said it, but the magic of step 6 and 7 kind of happened in the actions of 8 and 9. Just like if you look at step 3, like, you know, you say your third step prayer and then you do nothing, you're probably going to go get drunk. You're going to go get high because you don't follow it up with action. So it's like I needed to follow this stuff up with action. So what did I do is I went back to a couple ex-girlfriends and I sat down and I made those amends. You know what I mean? And a couple months go by and, you know, a lot of prayers still getting thrown at it. And, you know, now I've found myself in probably the greatest relationship I've ever known. You know, we've literally never had an argument, you know. And I've been able to show up and have those kind of, like, raw, emotional, heart-to-heart discussions, you know? And it's so weird when it's going on because I know that, like, whatever that thing is that's allowing me to do that is, like, beyond me. Because with all of my strength in my complete history of relationships, I've tried to, like, conjure up, like, I don't even know what to say, you know? Like, I just have no capacity to be emotionally present. I do not. And then they end up thinking I'm a sociopath or that I was just using them for something, and it gets really ugly, and then the vicious cycle starts again. But it's like now, because I was entirely ready in that sixth step, you know, and I was beaten into a state of humility through my own character defects, then it was like, I can ask God from a place of authenticity, you know, to help me with this stuff, you know. Now, kind of on the flip side of that coin, there's a lot of stuff that, so, for example, I've written 3 or 4 inventories. My mom's been on every single one for pretty much the same thing. The belief systems show up the same. The resentment's pretty much always the same. I usually end up talking to somebody about it at least once a week. It's literally never changed. And while I wish it would change, I'm just not entirely ready. You know what I mean? Like, I thought I was entirely ready to stop shooting dope for a really long time, like years. But I wasn't, because if I was, then I would have been receptive to this program. So while, like, I am consistently in collision with this thing with my mother, I just cannot conjure up the willingness and humility to, like, really look at it. And I don't know what stands in between me and that. It's like this weird intangible thing that I can, like, sense that there's something there, but it's like, for whatever reason, it is just not my path right now to, like, deal with. I really don't know, you know, but it's like, none of this stuff is on our terms, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm going to pass it over to Zach.
I'm really glad you ended with that. None of this stuff is on our terms, because I'm going to read the 7-step prayer real quick that they suggest. They say something like this. If the words "my creator" or anything like that freak you out, it's all good. It did me in the beginning. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And there's a lot to unpack there. The first thing that always just strikes me every time is, it says, please remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you, God, and to my fellows. It doesn't say, please remove every single defect of character which makes me uncomfortable or makes my life difficult or challenging, or which I have deemed unnecessary. You know, and all the time, I mean, this shit really, like gets me high. Like, I've experienced spiritual intoxication, complete peace and contentment, and I start to think that that's what it's about, and I start to think that this is just for me to try to feel like that, or something like that, you know, but it's not. You know, this is for me to become useful to God and my fellows. And, you know, a convenient byproduct of that is peace and serenity. But as soon as that becomes my goal, I got it twisted. So sometimes in my experience, like you were saying, I'll take it to step 6. I'll ask for the willingness. I'll humbly pray for it to be removed, and it sticks around. And I have to believe, and I've come to see that, like, sometimes these things, like, there's a purpose and there's a reason. I've gone through things in sobriety that had I not had that struggle and that experience, I wouldn't have been able to help the next guy that had a very similar, if not the same, experience. I've seen that time and time again with myself and with other people in the program. So it is important for me to remember that this isn't all in my terms, because I can start running the show with this stuff, you know. I know which defects need to be removed. I can determine what's objectionable, but not even on that on my own. You know, that comes through step 5, where I'm into God, myself, and another human being. And by then, I probably know it's objectionable. But if I'm just taking inventory, not running it by anyone, and deciding that, like, I know it needs to be removed, and then it's not even humbly asking God to remove it, because I'm already on self, you know. And that's something else, like, you hear a lot, don't, like, if you talk about humility, that means you don't have it. And I get that, and I get where that comes from, but it's also kind of a shame, because I think it's something that all of us that make it to this program and qualified need to, like, take into consideration. And I've heard a lot of useful things from people talking about humility. And that's a very important word in step seven, like humbly ask God to remove it. Like not ask God to remove it, like, hey man, like what? Why did they choose to put that word, humbly? You know, and what does that mean? And again, going back to the 12 and 12 of this, where they kind of expand a little more with a little more emphasis on these two steps in particular. You know, I don't want anyone to think that, like, I'm discrediting the big book, because the solution is in here in these first 164 pages. I believe that wholeheartedly. And I think that there's people out there that have tried to use the 12 and 12 in place of the big book, and that's a shame. And I think, and it's dangerous. But because of that, people have kind of discredited the 12 and 12 entirely. And it's like, this is still from the founders, and this is still some good stuff, especially these steps. Second paragraph of step 7 and 12 and 12 says, indeed, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. And we here practice these principles in all our affairs, and sometimes they get shortened into these like one word things like honesty, integrity, perseverance, and those are great things. But that's not anywhere in the literature, you know, as far as I know. Like, when they say practice these principles, they talk about practicing these steps as a way of life. And this is the only place that I've found personally, I've read through this, where they explicitly say what a foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps are. And they say the attainment of greater humility. So it's kind of a big deal. And it kind of makes sense for me, because pride, ego, fear, self-centeredness, those are like the main manifestations of self for me. They cut me off from God. They cut me off from my fellows. I'm starting to try to arrange life when I'm in those things, and we all have experienced how that goes, or we wouldn't be here. So, you know, my sponsor keeps things very simple, but it, you know, I think it sounds so simple because it's the truth. And he says that humility is just acknowledging that I need help. So in these steps, I'm essentially acknowledging that I need help and that I don't know. The last thing that always really strikes me about the seven-step prayer is the last word, grant me strength, is I go out from here to do your bidding. It's like a call to action, you know? It's like, so we have these character defects, and then we also have like some spiritual principles and some things that we can do, some conduct that like we're starting to see, like rigorous honesty, love and tolerance, service to others, these things, which I would say probably fall in the category of your bidding. And it's like, we're not just asking for these defects to be removed in this prayer, we're asking for the strength to go out and do these sort of opposing principles or opposing acts. You know, because I need help to be honest, too. I need help to have that love and tolerance, you know, with someone that I don't agree with. Or to do things for other people with no expectation of reward, you know. Service work is very rarely convenient for me. I'm always, my schedule is very full. And there's not a single time that I do service work in this program where I'm not trimming from another place in my life, whether it's my family or my work or whatever. And it's very easy for me to put that kind of stuff off and decide that like other things are more important. So I do have to pray for strength to do God's bidding, as well as for these manifestations of self-centeredness, these character defects, to be removed. But again, it works. It sounds ridiculous. I didn't think it worked. It wasn't until the second time I was going back through the steps and my sponsor had me do this stuff, and I had these like experiences of these things just falling away that I've been struggling with for years, that I now believe in it wholeheartedly.
Thanks, Zach. And kind of one thing I wanted to touch on, you know, like, that first pass through the steps, you know, with the character defects, like pretty much when I got sober, when I was like struck sober, a lot of stuff did just like fall off that never really, like, you know, like very rarely do I bold-faced lie to somebody these days, you know. I have yet to like army crawl into my roommate's bedroom and steal his wallet, you know, while he's sleeping, or, you know what I mean? Like all that, like, junky shit has fallen off and has not come back. But kind of like that other stuff that I was talking about that's typically all derived or rooted in myself, you know, still kind of remains in one way or another. And I don't know, I feel like I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but, you know, this willingness that, you know, Zach keeps talking about, you know, if you don't have it, pray for it. It's like, man, I've prayed for the willingness to, like, be willing to, like the shit with my mom. Like, I've prayed for that willingness, but, like, that prayer was honestly a lie. You know, like, for whatever reason, like, I just know, like, I'm just not ready to let that shit go right now. You know what I mean? Like, there's some resentments that I still have. I can think of one friend of mine in particular that, like, I know I'm wrong, you know, and it's, you know, it doesn't eat my lunch a whole lot, but, like, I'm just not willing. You know what I mean? And if I were to pray for it, it would be a lie, you know? And again, that just kind of speaks to the fact that, like, you know, this willingness is granted, that humility is granted, and it's never, in my experience, been a comfortable experience. Like, when I find myself, you know, in humility, or when I find myself becoming willing to do something, it's never because something great just happened. You know what I mean? You hear in this program all the time, like, living happy, joyous, and free, and all that stuff, and it's like, you know, I have access and I have an understanding of what it means to be happy, joyous, and free, but the path from here to there is not a straight line. It's not always comfortable. More often than not, I become aware of, you know, where I'm falling short rather than, you know, the things I'm doing really well. You know, and I think it's just one thing, you know, I sit in a lot of meetings and, you know, it's all good, you know, it's great to talk about how great God is working in your life and, you know, all this cool stuff that's going on and, you know, praise God, like, thank you, God, like, you know, all this stuff, like, that's great. I'm glad God's working for you, you know, but I think it can paint kind of an unrealistic picture to the newcomer as to what sobriety looks like. You know what I mean? Because if we come in here and we think, you know, we hear in these meetings, like, you know, all this great stuff's going on and, you know, God is good and God is love and God is this and God is that, then does that mean that, like, you know, all this pain and stuff that you're going through, you know, that's really leading you to the willingness to ask God to remove it? Like, does that path mean that that's not God? You know, I don't choose to believe that. You know, I was taught very early on that, like, you know, if you just sit there and you slap a bunch of attributes on God, you're just putting him in a box and you're putting a limitation on whatever God is. You know, and if there's one thing I continuously learn in this program is that I don't have the foresight or, like, capacity to understand, like, what kind of irons God has in the fire for me. You know, when that relationship was blowing up in my face, you know, and I was really experiencing powerlessness to my own character, I had no idea that I was, like, waist deep in an experience that would give me the willingness and humility to, like, move forward from that. You know what I mean? We just don't have that kind of foresight. You know, so I think it's really important to kind of talk about, you know, the shitty stuff that's going on and to have people in your life that you can be real with and say, man, this is what I'm going through. This is what's going on. You know, I just caused all this harm. And your sponsor is like, man, you got to go clean that up. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go clean this mess up you just made. And all this stuff over here is starting to get cleaned up, too. You know what I mean? I think there's a really interesting connection between making amends and our character defects. You know, and I have a lot of evidence in my life to support that. You know, I think that's something that's necessary for us to have a belief about something is, you know, we need to have an experience with it, or we need to, you know, have evidence to support this hypothesis. You know, and my sponsor made this suggestion that, like, hey, maybe your financial life is kind of screwed up because you owe all this money. And I'm thinking, well, So you're telling me if I go and spend more money on cleaning this mess up, that God will allow me to, like, manage my finances better. That makes no sense, you know. But I had been beaten into a state of reasonableness to where I was willing to do something that wasn't my idea, you know. And I'm not going to get too into the amends stuff, but, you know, I did that. And just like when I cleaned up the mess with the girlfriend and you know, that part of me was removed, it was like I cleaned up some of my financial stuff and my financial stuff got better. You know what I mean? So I really do think there is a direct connection between, you know, what we have going on internally, you know, and kind of the mess we've created externally. You know, I do think they're directly proportional.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you touched on that about not wanting to mislead anyone or the newcomer, you know, because perfectionism tends to be run rampant in our rooms, and it's very easy to get super, like, dogmatic and perfectionistic with this stuff. But it is about progress and continually moving forward. And another thing my sponsor always tells me that I found very useful is the same voice that tells me to act out on a character defect is the same little voice that's going to beat me up for it afterwards. And I don't think that's the point, you know. When I fall short, like, I was riddled with guilt and shame when I came in here, and I, by God's grace, don't have much of that today. And, you know, every now and then I'll feel bad, but there's clear-cut action for that. You know, I discuss it with someone and make an amends if need be. I really don't think it's useful at all, and that's, again, what we're trying to do is become useful to beat ourselves up over this stuff, you know. It is, if I make it to bed at the end of the day and haven't shot dope, a fucking miracle. And I don't lose sight of that, you know. But I do continue to grow. I found that spiritual growth is always a subtractive process. I'm not adding anything. I'm just chiseling. Well, I think everyone sitting in this room is a manifestation of God. And we're all perfect. We're all enough already. You know, we have all these armors and defenses and self-centered things built up, you know, and all this is just trying to chisel it, keep us chiseled down back to who and what we really are so that we can just shine our light in the world around us. Sandy Beach, a pretty well-known speaker, has a nice little metaphor. It talks about, like, you know, it's like we're riding in a hot air balloon, and it's like all we got to do to, like, go higher and have a better view is to just throw more weight out of the basket, you know, and it's like, I came in that first year and got rid of a bunch of stuff and went up, you know, 2,000 feet, and it was beautiful, you know, and I'm going along, and it's like that becomes normal. We become used to it, and it's like we, you know, so it's hopeful. I don't want anyone to think that, like, oh, we got to get rid of all these character defects or else. It's like, no, it's cool. Like, I'm excited to know that always, no matter what, there's some shit I can work on and address and get rid of to, like, have a better experience and be more useful. So it really is a positive, and I'm glad you touched on that, because I can be getting real self-critical and perfectionistic sometimes, and that's not helpful for any of us, I don't think.
Well, and I think, too, you know, like, a lot of people come out of the fifth step with a lot of, like, guilt and shame and regret and all that stuff, and while, sure, it would be awesome to say, hey, you know, I wish I didn't do this or that or whatever, or I didn't treat you this way, you know, kind of looking at it from that perspective implies that, like, you could have done it differently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, like, you had the power to act differently, and, like, you made a choice or something to act like an asshole or whatever, and then you screwed all this stuff up, you know. But if I know for me, if I look back on my experience, you know, it was there, you know, there was no, like, rational thought process, you know, that led me to, you know, doing a number of whatever the stuff I did, you know, is it was always like there was no pause. There was no, like, assessment of, like, if I do this, this is going to happen. If I do this, that's going to happen. It was just a series of reactions. You know what I mean? And if you're anything like me, like, continuing to look at our character and how it's being refined, you know, I more and more come to the terms with the fact that, like, I cannot change this stuff. And if I cannot change this stuff, then kind of a little bit of that, like, guilt and shame, in theory, kind of goes away, because it's like, you know, I don't choose to be this way. You know what I mean? So, like, beating yourself up about it, is essentially lying to yourself as if you could do something differently. If you could do something differently, you would, and you wouldn't need this program, and I wouldn't be sitting up here, and we would all be perfect, and life would be good. I mean, life's still good, but, you know, like, I don't know. So, and I know it seems kind of hard to look at it from that way. You know, I'm not saying, you know, you're not responsible for your actions, because of course you are. Nobody wants to hear that, oh, I'm powerless over my character and it's just the fucking way she goes. Nobody wants to hear that. You know what I mean? We're still accountable to what, you know, how we show up and how we act, you know, but we have a way to, like, assess that and move through it, you know, and unfortunately it's just not on our timeline, really. You know, I don't get to say, you know, when I'm willing for this to be removed. I don't get to say, you know, when God's going to take it away or if he is. You know, Nathan kind of brought up, you know, are you okay not being okay? You know, and for me, that answer is usually yes. You know, and one thing that kind of helps me with that is, like, sitting down with a guy I'm working with, I'm more and more okay with what not okay looks like for me today. You know, because I see him and how not okay he is, and it's way less fucking okay than I am, ever. You know what I mean? Am I making sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's it.
Cool. What are we going to, 4?
Hmm?
We going to 4 o'clock?
Whenever.
Okay.
You guys think it's completed.
Okay.
Do you guys have time
to... Yeah, I would just say... Just a couple more things. One, just to piggyback off what you said, it's not in our timing. I can become entirely ready, and that's the objective of step 6, but it's not up to me when it's removed. And then just kind of elaborating on the line in this prayer they suggest, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. The way it was put to me, and they say, I think, you know, going into the 5th step, it's like we've been trying to build a better relationship with our Creator, something like that. Now, we're a relationship to this power, to God. That's different than a belief or even a conviction, right? Any good relationship is a two-way street, you know? And if I'm just asking for help and guidance, then that's not so much of a relationship. And if I'm not asking for help, then that's not a relationship at all. It's like, say I, you know, got a, you know, buddy, and I never call him, I never go see him. And then, like, how long is that relationship going to last, right? Like, we any good relationship, two-way street, right? So if we're trying to build a relationship with God, then there's something I got to do. And the way that it's always, like, hit me, because really I didn't believe in anything and I was completely agnostic, but I just started doing this stuff and taking this action and I had an experience that, like, I couldn't not believe in, right? So that's how I came to know God. So it's always, I've always felt like that action of living a certain way, and just simple things like honesty, love and tolerance and service, literally, like, if I can practice those as a way of life, then I feel like that's my part, right? Like, there's these things I'm powerless over that I need help with, but there's some shit that I do have power in, or that, you know, again, we're asking for strength to do this bidding, but so we're still relying on God. But my point being is that, like, I think it's very backwards if I'm thinking I can just ask for these character defects to be removed and I'm not doing God's bidding and I'm not trying to be useful to God and my fellows and I'm not trying to take the action that's clearly stated in this book, not necessarily in these 2 steps, but again, it all blends together and, like, is aiming toward a point. So it's like, I feel like we meet God halfway, through our action into what we're bringing to the world around us and the rest of God's kids, as Chuck Chamberlain calls it. So that's the only other thing that I would really add on to step 7 is that, like, in the step, it says we humbly ask him to remove these defects of character, but in this prayer that's in the big book, it's like almost like they're alluding to a little more like, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Like, we're about to get to work. We're about to start living a certain way of life. We've come to believe these things in the first three steps. We've looked at some shit in 4 and 5. And we're asking for strength to go do something with it, kind of deal. But anyway,
cool.
Step 6 and 7, try them out. Woo! Good stuff.
All right, let's go. Come back in 10 minutes.